Saphira arched her neck and uttered a ringing roar. Ahead, Glada responded likewise. Their fierce cries echoed across the vast dome of the sky, frightening the birds and beasts below. Flight. From Ellesmere, Saphira and Glada flew without stopping over the ancient forest of the elves, soaring high above the tall, dark pine trees. Sometimes the forest would break, and Aragorn would see a lake or a contorted river winding across the land. Often there was a herd of small roe deer gathered along the edge of the water, and the animals would stop and lift their heads to watch the dragons soar past. For the most part, however, Aragorn paid little attention to the scenery, because he was busy reciting within his mind every word of the ancient language Oromus had taught him. And if he forgot any or made a mistake in pronunciation, Oromus would have him repeat the word until he had memorized it. They arrived at the edge of Duweldenvarden by late afternoon of the first day. There, above the shadowed boundary between the trees and the fields of grass beyond, Glada and Saphira circled one another, and Glada said,
"Keep safe your heart, Saphira, and mine as well." "I will, master," Saphira replied.
And Oromus shouted from Glada's back, "Fair winds to you both, Aragorn, Saphira. When next we meet, let it be before the gates of Urubane."
"Fair winds to you as well,"
Aragorn called in return. Then Glada turned and followed the line of the forest westward, which would lead him to the northernmost tip of Isenstar Lake, and the lake thence to Gilead, while Saphira continued in the same southwesterly direction as before. Saphira flew all through that night, landing only to drink, and so Aragorn could stretch his legs and relieve himself. Unlike during their flight to Ellesmere, they encountered no headwinds. The air remained clear and smooth, as if even nature were eager for them to return to the Varden. When the sun rose on their second day, it found them already deep within the Haderach Desert, and heading straight south, so as to skirt the eastern border of the Empire. And by the time darkness had again engulfed the land and sky, and held them in its cold embrace, Saphira and Aragorn were beyond the confines of the sandy wastes, and were again soaring over the verdant fields of the Empire, their course such that they would pass between Urubane and Lake Tudostan, on their way to the city of Feinster. After flying for 2 days and 2 nights without sleep, Saphira was unable to continue. Swooping down to a small thicket of white birch trees by a pond, she curled up in their shade and napped for a few hours, while Aragorn kept watch and practiced his swordsmanship with Brisingr. Ever since they had parted with Oromus and Glada, a sense of constant anxiety had troubled Aragorn as he pondered what awaited him and Saphira at Feinster. He knew that they were better protected than most from death and injury, but when he thought back to the burning plains and to the Battle of Fardendur, and when he remembered the sight of blood spurting from severed limbs and the screams of wounded men and the white-hot lash of a sword slicing through his own flesh, then Aragorn's gut would roil and his muscles would shake with suppressed energy, and he did not know whether he wished to fight every soldier in the land, or flee in the opposite direction and hide in a deep, dark hole. His dread only worsened when he and Saphira resumed their journey and spotted lines of armed men marching over the fields below. Here and there pillars of pale smoke rose from sacked villages. The sight of so much wanton destruction sickened him. Averting his gaze, he squeezed the neck spike in front of him and squinted until the only thing visible through the bars of his blurry eyelashes was the white calluses on his knuckles.
"Little one,"
said Saphira, her thoughts slow and tired.
"We have done this before. Do not allow it to disturb you so."
Regretting that he had distracted her from flying, he said, "I'm sorry. I'll be fine when we get there. I just want it to be over."
"I know."
Aragorn sniffed and wiped his cold nose on the cuff of his tunic.
"Sometimes I wish I enjoyed fighting as much as you do." Then this would be so much easier.
If you did, she said, the entire world would cower before our feet, including Galbatorix. No, it is good you do not share my love of blood. We balance each other out, Aragorn. Apart, we are incomplete, but together we are whole. Now clear your mind of these poisonous thoughts, and tell me a riddle that will keep me awake.
Very well, he said after a moment. I am coloured red and blue and yellow, and every other hue of the rainbow. I am long and short, thick and thin, and I often rest coiled up. I can eat 100 sheep in a row and still be hungry. What am I?
A dragon, of course,
she said without hesitation. No, a woolen rug.
Bah!
Their third day of travelling crept past with agonizing slowness. The only sounds were those of Saphira's wings flapping, the steady rasp of her panting, and the dull roar of air rushing past Aragorn's ears. His legs and lower back ached from sitting in the saddle for so long, but his discomfort was slight compared with Saphira's. Her flight muscles burned with an almost unbearable amount of pain. Still, she persevered and did not complain, and she refused his offer to alleviate her suffering with a spell, saying,
"You will need the strength when we arrive."
Hours after dusk, Saphira wobbled and dropped several feet in a single, sickening lurch. Aragorn straightened, alarmed, and looked around for any clues as to what had caused the disturbance, but saw only blackness below and the glittering stars above.
"I think we just reached the Jeet River," said Saphira. "The air here is cool and moist, as it would be over water."
"Then Feinster shouldn't be much farther ahead. Are you sure you can find the city in the dark? We could be 100 miles north or south of it."
"No, we could not. My sense of direction may not be infallible, but it is certainly better than yours, or that of any other earthbound creature. If the elf maps we have seen were accurate, then we cannot be off by more than 50 miles north or south of Feinster. And at this height, we can easily see the city over that distance. We may even be able to smell the smoke from their chimneys."
And so it was. Later that night, when dawn was only a few hours away, a dull red glow appeared upon the western horizon. Seeing it, Aragorn twisted around and removed his armor from the saddlebags, then donned his mail hauberk, his arming cap, his helm, his braces, and his greaves. He wished he had his shield, but he had left it with the Varden before running to Mount Thardor with Nargajvog. Then Aragorn rummaged with one hand through the contents of his bags, until he found the silver flask of Faelnerve Oromis had given him. The metal container was cool to the touch. Aragorn drank a small sip of the enchanted liqueur, which seared the inside of his mouth and which tasted of elderberries and mead and mulled cider. Heat suffused his face. Within seconds his weariness began to recede as the restorative properties of the Faelnerve took effect. Aragorn shook the flask. To his concern, it felt as if a third of the precious liqueur was already gone, even though he had only consumed a single mouthful once before.
"I have to be more careful with it in the future," he thought.
As he and Saphira drew closer, the glow on the horizon resolved into thousands of individual points of light, from small handheld lanterns to cook fires to bonfires to huge patches of burning pitch that poured a foul black smoke into the night sky. By the ruddy light of the fires, Aragorn saw a sea of flashing spear points and gleaming helmets surging against the base of the large, well-fortified city, the walls of which teemed with tiny figures busy firing arrows at the army below, pouring cauldrons of boiling oil between the merlins of the parapet, cutting ropes thrown over the walls, and pushing away the rickety wooden ladders the besiegers kept leaning against the ramparts. Faint calls and cries floated upward from the ground, as well as the boom of a battering ram crashing against the city's iron gates.
The last of Aragorn's weariness vanished as he studied the battlefield and noted the placement of the men and the buildings and the various pieces of war machinery. Extending outward from the walls of Feinster were hundreds of ramshackle hovels, crammed one against another, with hardly enough room for a horse to pass between. The dwellings of those too poor to afford a house within the main part of the city. Most of the hovels appeared deserted, and a wide swath had been demolished, so that the Varden could approach the city walls in force. A score or more of the mean huts were burning, and even as he watched, the fires spread, leaping from one thatched roof to another. East of the hovels, curved black lines scored the earth, where trenches had been excavated to protect the Varden's camp. On the other side of the city were docks and wharves, similar to those Aragorn remembered from Tirm. And then the dark and restless ocean that seemed to extend to infinity. A thrill of feral excitement ran through Aragorn, and he felt Saphira shiver underneath him at the same time. He gripped the hilt of Brisinga. "They don't seem to have noticed us yet. Shall we announce our arrival?" Saphira answered him by loosing a roar that made his teeth rattle, and by painting the sky in front of them with a thick sheet of blue fire. Below, the Varden at the foot of the city and the defenders upon the ramparts paused, and for a moment silence enveloped the battlefield. Then the Varden began to cheer and bang their spears and swords against their shields, while great groans of despair wafted from the people of the city. "Ah!" exclaimed Aragorn, blinking. "I wish you hadn't done that. Now I can't see anything."
"Sorry."
Still blinking, he said, "The first thing we should do is find a horse that just died, or some other animal, so that I can replenish your strength with theirs."
"You don't have—"
Saphira stopped talking as another mind touched theirs. After a half-second of panic, Aragorn recognized the consciousness as that of Triana.
"Aragorn! Saphira!" cried the sorceress. "You're just in time! Arya and another elf scaled the walls, but they were trapped by a large group of soldiers. They won't survive another minute unless someone helps them. Hurry!"
Brisinger. Saphira tucked her wings close to her body and tipped into a steep dive, hurtling toward the dark buildings of the city. Aragorn ducked his head against the blast of wind that tore at his face. The world spun around them as Saphira rolled to her right so that the archers on the ground would have difficulty shooting her. Aragorn's limbs grew heavy as Saphira pulled out of the dive. Then she leveled out and the weight pressing down on him vanished. Like strange, shrieking hawks, arrows whistled past them, some missing their mark, while Aragorn's wards deflected the rest. Swooping low over the outer city walls, Saphira roared again and lashed out with her claws and tail, knocking groups of screaming men off the parapet and toward the hard ground 80 feet below. A tall square tower, armed with 4 ballistae, stood at the far end of the southern wall. The huge crossbows fired 12-foot-long javelins toward the Varden massed before the city gates. Inside the curtain wall, Aragorn and Saphira spotted 100 or so soldiers gathered around a pair of warriors who stood with their backs pressed against the base of the tower, desperately trying to fend off a thicket of thrusting blades. Even in the gloom and from high above, Aragorn recognized one of the warriors as Arya. Saphira leaped down from the parapet and landed in the midst of the soldiers, crushing several men beneath her feet. The rest scattered, screaming with fear and surprise. Saphira roared, frustrated that her prey was escaping, and whipped her tail across the dirt, flattening a dozen more soldiers. A man tried to run past her. Fast as a striking snake, she caught him between her jaws and shook her head, snapping his spine. She disposed of another 4 in a similar manner. By then the remaining men had vanished among the buildings. Aragorn quickly pulled loose his leg straps, then jumped to the ground. The additional weight of his armor drove him to one knee as he landed. He grunted and pushed himself up onto his feet.
"Aragorn!"
cried Arya, running up to him. She was panting and drenched with sweat. Her only armor was a padded jerkin and a light helm, painted black so it would not cast unwanted reflections.
"Welcome, Bjartskuller. Welcome, Shadeslayer," purred Blodgarm from by her side, his short fangs orange and glistening in the torchlight, his yellow eyes glowing. The ruff of fur on the elf's back and neck stood on end, which made him appear even fiercer than usual. Both he and Arya were stained with blood, although Aragorn could not tell if the blood was theirs.
"Are you hurt?" he asked.
Arya shook her head, and Blodgarm said, "A few scratches, but nothing serious."
"What are you doing here without reinforcements?"
asked Saphira.
"The gates," said Arya, gasping. "For 3 days we've tried to break them, but they're impervious to magic, and the battering ram has barely dented the wood. So I convinced Nessawada to—"
When Arya paused to regain her breath, Blodgarm picked up the thread of her narrative.
"Arya convinced Nessawada to stage tonight's attack, so that we could sneak into Feinster without being noticed and open the gates from within. Unfortunately, we encountered a trio of spellcasters. They engaged us with their minds and prevented us from using magic while they summoned soldiers to overwhelm us with sheer numbers."
While Blodgarm spoke, Aragorn placed a hand on the chest of one of the dead soldiers and transferred what energy remained in the man's flesh into his own body, and thence to Saphira.
"Where are the spellcasters now?" he asked, proceeding to another corpse.
Blodgarm's fur-covered shoulders rose and fell.
"They seem to have taken fright at your appearance, Shortagal." "As well they should," growled Saphira.
Aragorn drained the energy from 3 more soldiers, and from the last he also took the man's round wooden shield.
"Well then," he said, standing, "let us go open the gates for the Varden, shall we?" "Yes, and without delay," said Arya.
She started forward, then cast a sideways glance at Aragorn.
"You have a new sword."
It was not a question. He nodded.
"Runan helped me to forge it."
"And what is the name of your weapon, Shadeslayer?" asked Blodgarm.
Aragorn was about to answer, when 4 soldiers ran out from the mouth of a dark alleyway, spears lowered. In a single, smooth motion, he drew Brisinger from its sheath and slashed through the haft of the lead man's spear, and continuing with the blow, decapitated the soldier. Brisinger seemed to shimmer with savage delight. Arya lunged forward and stabbed 2 of the other men before they could react, while Blodgarm leaped sideways and tackled the last soldier, killing him with his own dagger.
"Hurry!"
cried Arya, and started to run toward the city gates. Aragorn and Blodgarm raced after her, while Saphira followed close behind, her claws loud against the paving stones of the street. Archers fired arrows at them from the parapet above, and 3 different times soldiers rushed out from the main bulk of the city and flung themselves against them. Without slowing, Aragorn, Arya, and Blodgarm cut down the attackers, or else Saphira blasted them with a withering torrent of fire. The steady boom of the battering ram became ever louder as they approached the 40-foot-tall gates of the city. Aragorn saw 2 men and a woman who were garbed in dark robes standing before the iron-bound doors, chanting in the ancient language and swaying from side to side with upheld arms. The 3 spellcasters fell silent when they noticed Aragorn and his companions, and with their robes flapping, ran up the main street of Feinster, which led to the keep at the far side of the city. Aragorn longed to pursue them. However, it was more important to let the Varden into the city, where they would no longer be at the mercy of the men on the walls.
"I wonder what mischief they have planned," he thought, worried as he watched the spellcasters depart.
Before Aragorn, Arya, Blodgarm, and Saphira arrived at the gates, 50 soldiers in gleaming armor streamed out of the guard towers and positioned themselves in front of the huge wooden doors. One of the soldiers pounded the hilt of his sword against his shield and shouted,
"Never shall you pass, foul demons! This is our home, and we shall not allow Urgles and elves and other inhuman monsters to enter! Begone, for you shall find nothing but blood and sorrow in Feinster!"
Arya pointed at the guard towers and murmured to Aragorn,
"The gears for opening the gates are hidden within there. Go," he said. "You and Blodgarm sneak around the men and slip into the towers. Saphira and I will keep them occupied in the meantime."
Arya nodded. Then she and Blodgarm disappeared into the pools of inky shadows that surrounded the houses behind Aragorn and Saphira. Through his bond with her, Aragorn sensed that Saphira was gathering herself to pounce upon the group of soldiers. He put a hand on one of her forelegs.
"Wait," he said. "Let me try something first."
"If it doesn't work, then may I tear them to shreds?"
she asked, licking her fangs.
"Yes, then you may do what you wish with them."
Aragorn slowly walked toward the soldiers, holding his sword and shield out to either side. An arrow shot toward him from above, only to stop dead in the air 3 feet from his chest and drop straight to the ground. Aragorn looked over the soldiers' frightened faces, then raised his voice and said,
"My name is Aragorn Shadeslayer. Perhaps you have heard of me, and perhaps not. In either case, know this. I am a dragon rider, and I have sworn to help the Varden remove Galbatorix from his throne. Tell me, have any of you sworn fealty in the ancient language to Galbatorix of the Empire? Well, have you?"
The same man who had spoken before, who appeared to be the captain of the soldiers, said,
"We would not swear fealty to the king even if he held a sword to our necks. Our loyalty belongs to Lady Lorana. She and her family have ruled us for 4 generations, and they've done a fine job of it, too."
The other soldiers muttered in agreement.
"Then join us!" cried Aragorn. "Lay down your weapons, and I promise no harm shall come to you or your families. You cannot hope to hold Feinster against the combined might of the Varden, Surda, the dwarves, and the elves."
"So you say," shouted one of the soldiers. "But what if Murtagh and that red dragon of his should come here again?"
Aragorn hesitated, then said in a confident tone,
"He is no match for me and the elves who fight with the Varden. We have already driven him off once before."
To the left of the soldiers, Aragorn saw Arya and Blodgarm sidle out from behind one of the stone staircases that led to the top of the walls, and with silent footsteps creep toward the leftmost guard tower.
The captain of the soldiers said, "We may not have pledged ourselves to the king, but Lady Lorana has. What will you do to her, then? Kill her? Imprison her? No, we will not betray our trust and allow you to pass, nor the monsters clawing at our walls. You and the Varden hold nothing but the promise of death for those who have been forced to serve the Empire. Why couldn't you have left well enough alone, eh, Dragon Rider? Why couldn't you have kept your head down so the rest of us could live in peace? But no. The lure of fame and glory and riches was too great. You had to bring rack and ruin to our homes so that you could satisfy your ambitions. Well, I curse you, Dragon Rider. I curse you with all my heart. May you leave Alagaesia and never return."
A chill crept over Aragorn, for the man's curse echoed that which the last Razak had cast upon him in Helgrind, and he remembered how Angela had foretold that very future for him. With an effort he put aside such thoughts and said,
"I do not wish to kill you, but I will if I must. Lay down your weapons."
Arya silently opened the door at the bottom of the leftmost guard tower and slipped inside. Stealthy as a hunting wildcat, Blodgarm crept behind the soldiers toward the other tower. If any of the men had turned around, they would have seen him. The captain of the soldiers spat on the ground by Aragorn's feet.
"You don't even look human yourself. You're a traitor to your race, you are."
And with that, the man raised his shield and hefted his sword and slowly walked toward Aragorn.
"Shade Slayer," growled the soldier. "Ha! I'd as soon believe my brother's 12-year-old son had killed a shade as a youth like you."
Aragorn waited until the captain was only a few feet away. Then he took a single step forward and stabbed Brisinger through the center of the man's embossed shield, through the arm underneath, and then through the man's chest and out his back. The man convulsed once and was still. As Aragorn pulled his blade free of the corpse, there was a discordant clamour from within the guard towers, as gears and chains began to turn, and the massive beams that held closed the city gates began to withdraw.
"Lay down your weapons, or die!"
Aragorn shouted. Bellowing in unison, 20 soldiers ran at him, brandishing their swords. The others either dispersed and fled toward the heart of the city, or else took Aragorn's advice and placed their swords and spears and their shields on the grey paving stones and knelt by the side of the street with their hands on their knees. A fine mist of blood formed around Aragorn as he cut his way through the soldiers, dancing from one to the next faster than they could react. Saphira knocked 2 of the soldiers over, then set another 2 on fire with a short burst of flame from her nostrils, cooking them in their armor. Aragorn slid to a stop, several feet beyond the rearmost soldier, and held his position, his sword arm outstretched from the blow he had just dealt, and waited until he heard the man topple to the ground, first one half, and then the other. Arya and Blodgarm emerged from the guard towers just as the gates groaned and swung outward, revealing the blunt and splintered end of the Varden's massive battering ram. Above, the archers on the parapet cried out in dismay and retreated toward more defensible positions. Dozens of hands appeared around the edges of the gates and pulled them farther apart, and Aragorn saw a mass of grim-faced Varden, men and dwarves alike, crowded in the archway beyond.
"Shade Slayer!"
they shouted, and also
"Hajatlam!"
and "Welcome back! The hunting is good today!"
"These are my prisoners," Aragorn said, and pointed with Brisinger at the soldiers kneeling by the side of the street.
"Bind them and see that they are treated well. I gave my word that no harm would come to them."
6 warriors hurried to follow his order.
The Varden rushed forward, streaming into the city, their jangling armor and pounding boots creating a continuous rolling thunder.
Aragorn was pleased to see Roran and Horst and several other men from Carvajal in the 4th rank of the warriors. He hailed them, and Roran raised his hammer in greeting and ran toward him. Aragorn grasped Roran's right forearm and pulled him into a rough hug. Drawing back, he noticed that Roran seemed older and hollow-eyed compared with before.
"About time you got here," Roran grunted. "We've been dying by the hundreds trying to take the walls."
"Saphira and I came as fast as we could. How's Katrina?"
"She's fine."
"Once this is over, you'll have to tell me everything that's happened to you since I left."
Roran pressed his lips together and nodded. Then he pointed at Brisinger and said,
"Where did you get the sword?"
"From the elves."
"What's it called?"
"Bris..."
Aragorn started to say, but then the 11 other elves who Miss Lanzardi had assigned to protect him and Saphira sprinted out of the column of men and surrounded the 2 of them. Arya and Blodgarm rejoined them as well, Arya wiping clean the slim blade of her sword. Before Aragorn could resume speaking, Jormunda rode through the gates and hailed him, shouting,
"Shade Slayer! Well met indeed!"
Aragorn greeted him in return and asked,
"What should we do now?"
"Whatever you see fit,"
Jormunda replied, reining in his brown charger.
"We have to fight our way up to the keep.
It doesn't look as if Saphira would fit between most of the houses, so fly around and harry their forces where you can. If you could break open the keep or capture Lady Lorana, it would be a great help."
"Where's Nasuada?"
Jormunda gestured over his shoulder.
"At the rear of the army, coordinating our forces with King Orin."
Jormunda glanced out over the influx of warriors, then looked back at Aragorn and Roran.
"Stronghammer, your place is with your men, not gossiping with your cousin."
Then the lean, wiry commander spurred his horse forward and rode up the gloomy street, shouting orders to the Varden. As Roran and Arya started to follow, Aragorn grabbed Roran by the shoulder and tapped Arya's blade with his own.
"Wait," he said.
"What?"
both Arya and Roran demanded in exasperated tones.
"Yes, what?"
Sephira asked.
We should not be sitting and talking when there is sport to be had.
My father, Aragorn exclaimed. It's not Morzan. It's Brom. Roran blinked.
Brom?
Yes, Brom.
Even Arya appeared surprised.
Are you sure, Aragorn? How do you know? Of course I'm sure. I'll explain later, but I couldn't wait to tell you the truth.
Roran shook his head.
Brom? I never would have guessed, but I suppose it makes sense.
You must be glad to be rid of Morzan's name.
More than glad, Aragorn said, grinning.
Roran clapped him on the back, then said, Watch yourself, eh? And trotted after Horst and the other villagers. Arya moved away in the same direction, but before she went more than a few steps, Aragorn called her name and said,
The cripple who is whole has left Duweldenvarden and joined Islanzadi at Gilead.
Arya's green eyes widened and her lips parted as if she were about to ask a question. Before she could, the column of inrushing warriors swept her deeper into the city. Blodgarm sidled closer to Aragorn.
Shadeslayer, why did the Morning Sage leave the forest?
He and his companion felt that the time had come to strike against the Empire and to reveal their presence to Galbatorix.
The elf's fur rippled.
That is indeed momentous news.
Aragorn climbed back onto Sephira.
To Blodgarm and his other guards, he said, Work your way up to the keep. We'll meet you there. Without waiting for the elf to answer, Sephira jumped onto the stairs leading to the top of the city walls. The stone steps cracked under her weight as she climbed up to the wide parapet, from which she took flight over the burning hovels outside Feinster, flapping quickly to gain altitude.
Arya will have to give us permission before we can tell anyone else about Oromis and Gleda, said Aragorn, remembering the oath of secrecy he, Oric, and Sephira had sworn to Queen Islanzadi during their first visit to Ellesmira.
I am sure she will once she hears our account, said Sephira.
Aye.
Aragorn and Sephira flew from place to place within Feinster, landing wherever they spotted a large clump of men, or wherever members of the Varden appeared beleaguered. Unless someone immediately attacked, Aragorn attempted to convince each group of enemies to surrender. He failed as often as he succeeded, but he felt better for having tried, for many of the men who thronged the streets were ordinary citizens of Feinster and not trained soldiers. To each, Aragorn said,
The Empire is our foe, not you. Do not take up arms against us, and you shall have no cause to fear us.
The few times Aragorn saw a woman or child running through the dark city, he ordered them to hide in the nearest house, and without exception they obeyed. Aragorn examined the minds of every person around him and Sephira, searching for magicians who might mean them harm, but he found no other spellcaster besides the three they had already seen, and the three were careful to keep their thoughts hidden from him. It concerned him that they did not seem to have rejoined the fight in any noticeable way.
Maybe they intend to abandon the city, he said to Sephira.
Would Galbatorix let them leave in the middle of a battle?
I doubt he wants to lose any of his spellcasters.
Maybe, but we should still tread with care. Who knows what they are planning?
Aragorn shrugged.
For now, the best thing we can do is help the Varden secure Feinster as quickly as possible.
She agreed, and angled toward a skirmish in a nearby square. Fighting in a city was different from fighting in the open, as Aragorn and Sephira were accustomed to. The narrow streets and close-set buildings hampered Sephira's movements, and made it difficult to react when soldiers attacked, even though Aragorn could sense the men approaching long before they arrived. Their encounters with the soldiers devolved into dark and desperate struggles, broken only by the occasional burst of fire or magic. More than once, Sephira wrecked the front of a house with a careless sweep of her tail. She and Aragorn always managed to escape permanent injury, through a combination of luck, skill, and Aragorn's wards, but the attacks made them even more cautious and tense than they normally were in battle.
The fifth such confrontation left Aragorn so enraged that when the soldiers began to withdraw, as they always did in the end, he gave chase, determined to kill every last one. They surprised him by swerving off the street and crashing through the barred door of a millinery shop. Aragorn followed, leaping over the cracked wreckage of the door. The inside of the shop was pitch black and smelled like chicken feathers and stale perfume. He could have lit the shop with magic, but since he knew the soldiers were at a greater disadvantage than he was, he refrained. Aragorn felt their minds nearby, and he could hear their ragged breathing, but he was uncertain of what lay between him and them. He inched deeper into the inky shop, feeling his way with his feet. He held his shield in front of him, and Brisinger over his head, ready to strike. Faint as a line of thread falling to the floor, Aragorn heard an object flying through the air. He jerked backward and staggered as a mace or a hammer struck his shield, breaking it into pieces. Shouts erupted, a man knocked over a chair or a table, and something shattered against a wall. Aragorn lashed out and felt Brisinger sink into flesh and bury itself in bone. A weight dragged on the end of his sword. Aragorn yanked it free, and the man he had struck collapsed across his feet. Aragorn dared a glance back at Saphira, who was waiting for him in the narrow street outside. Only then did Aragorn see that there was a lantern mounted on an iron post beside the street, and that the light it cast rendered him visible to the soldiers. He quickly moved from the open doorway and threw away the remnants of his shield. Another crash echoed through the shop, and there was a confusion of footsteps as the soldiers rushed out the back and up a flight of stairs. Aragorn scrambled after them. The second story was the living quarters of the family who owned the store below. Several people screamed, and a baby began to wail, as Aragorn bounded through a maze of small rooms. But he ignored them, intent as he was on his prey. At last he cornered the soldiers in a cramped sitting room, illuminated by a single flickering candle. Aragorn slew the four soldiers with four strokes of his sword, wincing as their blood splattered him. He scavenged a new shield from one, then paused and studied the corpses. It seemed rude to leave them lying in the middle of the sitting room, so he threw them out a nearby window. On his way back to the stairs, a figure stepped around a corner and stabbed a dagger toward Aragorn's ribs. The tip of the dagger stopped a fraction of an inch from Aragorn's side, halted by his wards. Startled, Aragorn swept Brisinger upward and was about to strike his attacker's head from his shoulders when he realized that the holder of the dagger was a thin boy of no more than 13. Aragorn froze. "That could be me," he thought. "I would have done the same if I were in his shoes." Looking past the boy, he saw a man and a woman standing in their nightgowns and knit caps, clutching each other and staring at him with horror. A tremor ran through Aragorn. He lowered Brisinger, and with his free hand removed the dagger from the boy's now soft grip. "If I were you," Aragorn said, and the loudness of his voice shocked him, "I would not go outside until the battle is over." He hesitated, then added, "I'm sorry." Feeling ashamed, he hurried from the shop and rejoined Saphira. They continued along the street. Not far from the millinery shop, Aragorn and Saphira came across several of King Orin's men, carrying gold candlesticks, silver plates and utensils, jewellery and an assortment of furnishings, out of a well-appointed mansion the men had broken into. Aragorn dashed a pile of rugs from the arms of one man. "Put these things back!" he shouted to the entire group. "We're here to help these people, not steal from them! They are our brothers and sisters, our mothers and fathers! I'll let you off this once, but spread the word that if you or anyone else goes looting, I'll have you strung up and whipped as the thieves you are!" Saphira growled, emphasizing his point. Under their watchful gaze, the chastened warriors returned the spoils to the marble-clad mansion. "Now," Aragorn said to Saphira, "maybe we can..." "Shadeslayer! Shadeslayer!" shouted a man running toward them from deeper within the city. His arms and armor identified him as one of the Varden. Aragorn tightened his grip on Brisinger. "What?" We need your help, Shadeslayer, and yours too, Saphira.
They followed the warrior through Feinster until they arrived at a large stone building. Several dozen Vardens sat hunched behind a low wall in front of the building. They appeared relieved to see Aragorn and Saphira.
"Stay back," said one of the Varden, gesturing. "There's a whole group of soldiers inside, and they have bows aimed at us."
Aragorn and Saphira halted just out of sight of the building. The warrior who had brought them said,
"We can't get at them. The doors and windows are blocked, and they shoot at us if we try to chop our way in."
Aragorn looked at Saphira.
"Shall I, or shall you?"
"I'll attend to it," she said,
and jumped into the air with a rush of spreading wings. The building shook, windows shattering, as Saphira landed on the roof. Aragorn and the other warriors watched with awe as she fit the tips of her claws into the mortared grooves between the stones and, snarling from the effort, tore the building apart until she exposed the terrified soldiers, whom she killed like a terrier kills rats. When Saphira returned to Aragorn's side, the Varden edged away from her, clearly frightened by her display of ferocity. She ignored them and began licking her paws, cleaning the gore from her scales.
"Have I ever told you how glad I am we're not enemies?" Aragorn asked.
"No, but it's very sweet of you."
Throughout the city, the soldiers fought with a tenacity that impressed Aragorn. They gave ground only when forced and made every attempt to slow the Varden's advance. Because of their determined resistance, the Varden did not arrive at the western side of the city where the keep stood until the first faint light of dawn began to spread across the sky. The keep was an imposing structure. It was tall and square, and adorned with numerous towers of differing height. The roof was made of slate, so attackers could not set it on fire. In front of the keep was a large courtyard, in which were several low outbuildings and a row of four catapults, and encircling the lot was a thick curtain wall, interspersed with smaller towers of its own. Hundreds of soldiers manned the battlements, and hundreds more teemed within the courtyard. The only way to enter the courtyard on the ground was through a wide, arched passageway in the curtain wall, which was closed off by both an iron portcullis and a set of thick oaken doors. Several thousand of the Varden stood pressed against the curtain wall, striving to break through the portcullis with the battering ram they had brought from the main gate of the city, or else to surmount the walls with grappling hooks and ladders, which the defenders kept pushing away. Flocks of whining arrows arched back and forth over the wall. Neither side seemed to have the advantage.
"The gate!" said Aragorn, pointing.
Saphira swept down from on high and cleared the parapet above the portcullis with a jet of billowing fire, smoke venting from her nostrils. She dropped onto the top of the wall, jarring Aragorn, and said,
"Go! I'll see to the catapults before they start lobbing rocks at the Varden."
"Be careful!"
He lowered himself to the parapet from her back.
"It is they who must be careful," she replied.
She snarled at the pikemen gathering around the catapults. Half of them turned and fled inside. The wall was too high for Aragorn to comfortably jump to the street below, so Saphira draped her tail over the side and wedged it between two merlins. Aragorn sheathed Brisinga, then climbed down, using the spikes on her tail like rungs on a ladder. When he reached the tip, he released his hold and fell the remaining 20 feet. He rolled to lessen the impact as he landed amid the press of Varden.
"Greetings, Shadeslayer," said Blodgarm, emerging from the crowd,
along with the 11 other elves.
"Greetings."
Aragorn drew Brisinga again.
"Why haven't you already opened the gate for the Varden?"
"The gate is protected by many spells, Shadeslayer. It would require much strength to break and shatter. My companions and I are here to protect you and Saphira, and we cannot fulfill our duty if we exhaust ourselves on other tasks."
Biting back a curse, Aragorn said,
"Would you rather Saphira and I exhaust ourselves, Blodgarm? Will that make us safer?" The elf stared at Aragorn for a moment, his yellow eyes inscrutable. Then he bowed his head slightly.
"We shall open the gate at once, Shadeslayer."
"No, don't," growled Aragorn. "Wait here."
Aragorn pushed his way to the front of the Varden and strode toward the lowered portcullis.
"Give me room," he shouted, gesturing at the warriors.
The Varden backed away from him, forming an open area 20 feet across. A javelin shot from a ballista glanced off his wards and flew spinning down a side street. Saphira roared from inside the courtyard, and there came the sounds of timbers breaking and of taut rope snapping in twain. Grasping his sword with both hands, Aragorn lifted it overhead and shouted, "Brisingr!" The blade burst into blue fire, and the warriors behind him uttered exclamations of amazement. Aragorn stepped forward then, and smote one of the crossbars of the portcullis. A blinding flash lit the wall and surrounding buildings as the sword sliced through the thick piece of metal. At the same time, Aragorn noticed a sudden increase in his fatigue, as Brisingr severed the wards protecting the portcullis. He smiled. As he had hoped, the spells of counter-magic with which Runan had imbued Brisingr were more than sufficient to defeat the enchantments. Moving at a quick but steady pace, Aragorn cut as large a hole as he could in the portcullis, then stood aside as the loose piece of grating fell flat onto the stones of the street with a discordant clang. He stepped past the grating and walked forward to the oaken doors recessed farther within the curtain wall. He aligned Brisingr with the hairline crack between the two doors, put his weight behind the sword, and pushed the blade through the narrow gap and out the other side. Then he increased the flow of energy to the fire blazing around the blade, until it was hot enough to burn its way through the dense wood as easily as a knife cuts through fresh bread. Copious amounts of smoke billowed from around the blade, making his throat sting and his eyes smart. Aragorn worked the sword upward, burning through the immense wooden beam that barred the doors shut from the inside. As soon as he felt the resistance against Brisingr's blade lessen, he withdrew the sword and extinguished the flame. He wore thick gloves, so he did not shrink from grasping the glowing edges of one door and pulling it open with a mighty heave. The other door also swung outward, seemingly of its own accord, although a moment later Aragorn saw that it was Saphira who had pushed it open. She sat to the right of the entryway, peering at him with sparkling sapphire eyes. Behind her, the four catapults lay in ruins. Aragorn went to stand with Saphira as the Varden poured into the courtyard, filling the air with their clamorous battle cries. Exhausted by his efforts, Aragorn placed a hand over the belt of Beloth the Wise and bolstered his flagging strength with some of the energy he had stored within the 12 diamonds hidden inside the belt. He offered the rest of it to Saphira, who was equally tired, but she declined, saying,
"Keep it for yourself. You haven't that much left. Besides, what I really need is a meal and a full night's sleep."
Aragorn leaned against her and allowed his eyelids to drift halfway closed.
"Soon," he said, "soon this will all be over."
"I hope so,"
she replied.
Among the warriors who streamed past was Angela, garbed in her strange, flanged armor of green and black, and carrying her Húthvir, the double-bladed staff weapon of the dwarf priests. The herbalist paused next to Aragorn and with an impish expression said,
"An impressive display, but don't you think you're overdoing it a bit?"
"What do you mean?"
asked Aragorn, frowning. She lifted an eyebrow.
"Come now. Was it really necessary to set your sword on fire?"
Aragorn's expression cleared as he understood her objection. He laughed.
"Not for the portcullis, no. But I enjoyed it. Besides, I can't help it. I named the sword Fire in the ancient language, and every time I say the word, the blade flares up like a branch of dry wood in a bonfire."
"You named your sword Fire?"
Angela exclaimed with a note of incredulity.
Fire? What kind of a boring name is that? You might as well name your sword Blazing Blade and be done with it.
Fire indeed. Humph. Wouldn't you rather have a sword called Sheepbiter or Chrysanthemum Cleaver? Or something else with imagination?
I already have one Sheepbiter here, said Aragorn, and laid a hand on Saphira. Why would I need another? Angela broke out into a wide smile.
So you're not entirely devoid of wit, after all. There just might be hope for you.
And she danced off toward the keep, twirling her double-bladed staff by her side and muttering,
Fire?
Pah! A soft growl emanated from Saphira, and she said,
Be careful whom you call Sheepbiter, Aragorn, or you might get bitten yourself.
Yes, Saphira.
Shadow of Doom. By then, Blodgarm and his fellow elves had joined Aragorn and Saphira in the courtyard. But Aragorn ignored them and looked for Arya. When he spotted her running alongside Jormungandr on his charger, Aragorn hailed her and brandished his shield to attract her attention. Arya heeded his call and loped over, her stride as graceful as a gazelle's. She had acquired a shield, a full-sized helm, and a mail hauberk since they had parted, and the metal of her armor gleamed in the grey half-light that pervaded the city. As she drew to a stop, Aragorn said,
Saphira and I are going to enter the keep from above and try to capture Lady Lorana. Do you want to come with us?
Arya agreed with a terse nod. Springing from the ground onto one of Saphira's front legs, Aragorn climbed into her saddle. Arya followed his example an instant later and sat close behind him, the links of her hauberk pressing against his back. Saphira unfurled her velvety wings and took flight, leaving Blodgarm and the other elves gazing up at her with looks of frustration.
You should not abandon your guard so lightly,
Arya murmured in Aragorn's left ear. She wrapped her sword arm around his waist and held him tightly as Saphira wheeled above the courtyard. Before Aragorn could respond, he felt the touch of Glaeda's vast mind. For a moment the city below vanished, and he saw and felt only what Glaeda saw and felt. Little stinging hornet arrows bounced off his belly as he rose above the scattered wood caves of the two-legged round ears. The air was smooth and firm beneath his wings, perfect for the flying he would need to do. On his back, the saddle rubbed against his scales as Oromis altered his position. Glaeda flicked his tongue out and tasted the enticing aroma of burnt wood, cooked meat, spilled blood. He had been to this place many times before. In his youth it had been known by a different name than Gilead, and then the only inhabitants had been the somber, laughing, quick-tongued elves and the friends of elves. His previous visits had always been pleasant, but it pained him to remember the two nestmates who had died here, slain by the twisted mind forsworn. The lazy one-eye sun hovered just above the horizon. To the north, the big water Isenstar was a rippling sheet of polished silver. Below, the herd of pointed ears, commanded by Islanzadi, was arrayed around the broken anthill city. Their armor glittered like crushed ice. A pall of blue smoke lay over the whole area, thick as cold morning mist. And from the south, the small, angry Ripclaw Thorn winged his way toward Gilead, bellowing his challenge for all to hear. Morzan's son Murtagh sat upon his back, and in Murtagh's right hand, Zarok shone as bright as a nail. Sorrow filled Glaeda as he beheld the two miserable hatchlings. He wished he and Oromis did not have to kill them.
Once more, he thought, dragon must fight dragon, and rider must fight rider, and all because of that egg-breaker Galbatorix.
His mood grim, Glaeda quickened his flapping and spread his claws in preparation for tearing at his oncoming foes. Aragorn's head whipped on his neck as Saphira lurched to one side and dropped a score of feet before she regained her equilibrium.
"Did you see that as well?"
she asked.
"I did."
Worried, Aragorn glanced back at the saddlebags, where Glaeda's Heart of Hearts was hidden, and wondered if he and Saphira should try to help Oromis and Glaeda, but then reassured himself with the knowledge that there were numerous spellcasters among the elves. His teachers would not want for assistance.
"What is wrong?"
asked Arya, her voice loud in Aragorn's ear.
"Oromis and Glaeda are about to fight Thorn and Murtagh," said Saphira.
Aragorn felt Arya stiffen against him.
"How do you know?"
she asked.
"I'll explain later. I just hope they don't get hurt."
"As do I," said Arya.
Saphira flew high above the keep, then floated downward on silent wings and alighted upon the spire of the tallest tower. As Aragorn and Arya clambered onto the steep roof, Saphira said,
"I will meet you in the chamber below. The window here is too small for me."
And she took off, the gusts from her wings buffeting them. Aragorn and Arya lowered themselves over the edge of the roof and dropped to a narrow stone ledge 8 feet below. Ignoring the vertigo-inducing fall that awaited him if he slipped, Aragorn inched along the ledge to a cross-shaped window where he pulled himself into a large square room, lined with sheaves of quarrels and racks of heavy crossbows. If anyone had been in the room when Saphira landed, they had already fled. Arya climbed through the window after him. She inspected the room, then gestured at the stairs in the far corner and padded toward them, her leather boots silent on the stone floor. As Aragorn followed her, he sensed a strange confluence of energies below them, and also the minds of 5 people whose thoughts were closed to him. Wary of a mental attack, Aragorn withdrew into himself and concentrated upon reciting a scrap of elvish poetry. He touched Arya on the shoulder and whispered,
"Do you feel that?"
She nodded. "We should have brought Blodgarm with us." Together they descended the stairs, making every effort to be quiet. The next room in the tower was much larger than the last. The ceiling was over 30 feet high, and from it hung a lantern with faceted panes of glass. A yellow flame burned inside. Hundreds of oil paintings covered the walls, portraits of bearded men in ornate robes and expressionless women sitting amid children with sharp, flat teeth. Gloomy, windswept seascapes depicting the drowning of sailors, and scenes of battle, where humans slaughtered bands of grotesque Urgles. A row of tall wooden shutters set within the northern wall opened onto a balcony with a stone balustrade. Opposite the window, near the far wall, was a collection of small round tables littered with scrolls, 3 padded chairs, and 2 oversized brass urns filled with bouquets of dried flowers. A stout, grey-haired woman garbed in a lavender dress sat in one of the chairs. She bore a strong resemblance to several of the men in the paintings. A silver diadem adorned with jade and topaz rested upon her head. In the center of the room stood the 3 magicians Aragorn had glimpsed before in the city. The 2 men and a woman were facing each other, the hoods of their robes thrown back and their arms extended out to each side so that the tips of their fingers touched. They swayed in unison, murmuring an unfamiliar spell in the ancient language. A 4th person sat in the middle of the triangle they formed, a man garbed in an identical fashion, but who said nothing, and who grimaced as if in pain. Aragorn threw himself at the mind of one of the male spellcasters, but the man was so focused on his task, Aragorn failed to gain entry to his consciousness, and thus was unable to subordinate him to his will. The man did not even seem to notice the attack. Arya must have attempted the same thing, for she frowned and whispered,
"They were trained well." "Do you know what they are doing?"
he murmured. She shook her head. Then the woman in the lavender dress looked up and saw Aragorn and Arya crouched upon the stone stairs. To Aragorn's surprise, the woman did not call for help, but rather placed a finger upon her lips, then beckoned. Aragorn exchanged a perplexed glance with Arya.
"It could be a trap,"
he whispered.
It most likely is, she said.
What should we do?
Is Saphira almost here?
Yes.
Then let